Come on. I'm not focused on that. I spent the weekend listening to it on tape, so I wouldn't read the paper, wouldn't think about computers.
So what was the book?
I'm doing Outlander because it came in second in the Great American.
Hi, who just called in?
I wouldn't normally do, but I got a free book.
It's David Weiss with Business Oregon.
Thank you, David.
Sure. It's really good escapism if you don't want to think about modern American politics.
There's much not to think about.
Just turn it on the recording.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting of the Private Activity Bond Committee together in order. Thank you very much for short notice for being here. To turn to our agenda, first item of business is we're going to take a look at just the current allocations as a recap of where we stand. Together for us, right behind that allocation tab. Excuse me, where we currently stand. In summary, we've approved $200 million out of the balance of $264.99 million that we had available to us this year. We have an application before us that we'll talk about in a moment from Home Forward for $20.2 million. I would note that there is one expired allocation that's come back to us thus far, and that was for a project for Home Forward for Framework that did not come about. So we have a current balance of 81.9 for the balance of this calendar year. Anything else of relevance, Martha? Martha will be gathering together all the other balances that may or may not be available from state agencies, but we probably won't know that till the very end of the calendar year.
Sure.
We're counting, planning to keep on cranking up bond issues, and so that will be coming to us in our January meeting. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to folks from Home Forward and questions.
Do we have any update on how the folks at Port of Morrow are coming along?
Martha reached out to them, and my guess is that they have been delayed in the bond market. They were working also on a deal in Arizona, mm-hmm. simultaneous to the one in Oregon, and the capital markets have been very troubled lately for lower rated credit.
Mm-hmm.
So I spoke with Mary McPherson a few weeks ago, who didn't think that they would probably use their allocation by the end of the year. Because they're doing two deals, one, the bigger one being in Arizona, they were hoping to economies of scale. So we'll probably get that allocation back, and they'll come right back and ask us for
it. Sure, you've got to keep working on it. Got it.
I think it's going well from an investor standpoint, but right now, so the debt markets were a little unsettled when the stock market started.
Sure. Got that. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, committee members. I am Jonathan Trutt from Home Forward. I want to echo the thanks of being available on short notice for this meeting. It helps us stay on track toward the closing and the beginning of renovations as planned. So we really appreciate your flexibility. I'm going to do a little bit in terms of the context behind this ask and then dive into the details. I'll aim to keep it short. We are about halfway through converting our entire portfolio of public housing from the public housing side of HUD to the Section 8 side of HUD. From a resident perspective, things stay the same in terms of how much they pay each month for rent, but from a real estate perspective, it frees us up to leverage debt and also get tax credit equity to take care of a number of needed repairs that have been deferred over the years. So we're using two different HUD programs. One's called RAD, one's called Section 18. There are other housing authorities also using RAD that have 4% tax credit and bond debt. And for us, you saw a flurry of activity from us as the Private Activity Bond Committee about 4 or 5 years ago. And now we're heading into another flurry of activity. We have 5 different projects that will be coming before the committee in upcoming years. 4 of them, creatively named groups 5, 6, 7, and 8, are bundled of properties, scattered site, all within Multnomah County, that range roughly between 300 and 350 units in total, 7 to 9 buildings. And then there's a final property named Deacom, which is actually going to be the demolition of 40 units of public housing on a 5-acre site, and then the reconstruction with approximately 200 units of affordable housing, 40 of them replacing what's there with rental subsidy, and the balance being new affordable housing. So Group 5 is the first of a number of groups that you're going to be seeing. And Group 5 was before the committee earlier this year. It received an allocation of private activity bonds. And it remains on track to close by the end of this month, close on its financing, start its construction. The reason we're back is because of good news. We always aim to be conservative in terms of what we can expect from an appraiser in the context of these transactions. Appraiser ordered by our lender, appraisals ordered by our lender that relate to the value of the properties in their current state. That's relevant to these transactions because those valuations determine the amount of tax credits that come from the sale of the property from us as Home Forward to the limited partnership that provides the tax credit equity. So we got our appraisals back roughly a month ago, and we got really good news. The appraisals said that the buildings in Group 5 are worth significantly more than we originally anticipated, thereby generating more low-income tax credits as you work through your pro forma, just so long as a certain percentage of the costs of the project are financed with tax-exempt bonds. This could be more than 50%. So that's why we're back. We're looking to take advantage of the appraised values, the increase in value relative to what we initially expected, in order to be able to do more rehab, because I suppose there's a point at which you would get to a maximum amount of rehab where it wouldn't make sense to do more, but generally speaking, more rehab is always better. So the increase in additional private activity bonds will enable us to access more tax credit equity, which in round numbers is going to enable us to do $6 million more of rehab in Group 5. That rehabilitation, that additional rehabilitation that we would be able to afford is really focused on building systems. It's focused on the siding and the windows at two properties that will enable us to just tear off what's there and put something in there that we know is going to be good for 30 years. Yes, please.
Remind us on the original $30 million what you were going to be able to do in Group 5 versus the site. In other words, contextually, you were going to do, what were you going to do with the first $30 million that we gave?
Well, it's... You mean it's just a matter of rehab, or you
What was your rehab going to be?
I mean, it was going to...
It's a lower number.
It's the same approach... I'll say it this way. It's the same approach, regardless of the, you know, where we ultimately land in terms of the tax credit pricing and exactly where interest rates are. So we always start with building systems, and we're always going to start with, okay, let's look at the elevators, let's look at the roofs. Let's look at all the things that are fundamental to the property. So when we first came in for the two properties that we would now bring into the construction scope, the idea was we didn't have enough money right now, and we would be able over time to take care of it little by little, piecemeal with good planning over the course of 20 years. It's always better to do it in one fell swoop and get it done. Especially because these projects tend not to cash flow very well over time. And what's happening is the amount of money that you're putting in reserves is never growing at the same pace as construction cost escalation. So hence, with more money, we would like to expand what we do right now because we're signing up for another 60 years of affordability. And it's in terms of accessing capital markets and having a significant amount of money to come back to these properties and stay on top of their capital needs, sound asset management, it's really a 15 to 20 year window before we would be able to come back.
So the other question is why do you think the appraisals came in so much higher? Is it the general property market in Portland, or was it just you were too conservative? I mean, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I'm just wondering if there's a trend here.
I think it's a mix. I mean, the numbers we had in there were based on our experiences a few years ago when we were really the exact same method of generating tax credit. I think at that point, we may have had a very conservative appraiser hired by the bank. And I also know, of course, that the market really has changed significantly. So I think you put those two things together, and that's the reason for the significant delta in the value, the appraised value of the properties. I can tell you that for groups 6, 7, and 8, we now have data. So it may be a different appraiser with the next group, but we have far more current information about where at least one appraiser thinks the market is, and that will be reflected.
I wondered if it was a certain part of town that Group 5 was in, or just housing prices in general.
I wouldn't attribute it to part of town. I think part of it is also different firms. I don't want to get way out over my skis, but have different viewpoints of affordable housing. Anecdotally, you hear stories of appraisers looking at public housing, which historically has not generated any net cash, and said, well, on a net operating income, this thing is worth zero because it generates no dollars. So
kind of an appraiser who looked more at its market rate would be, if it was a market rate property?
What we did, because we wanted to make sure that we weren't starting down a path that wasn't going to be acceptable to Oregon housing. So what we talked about is there's a standard. You ask the appraiser, what is the property worth today in its current condition with the current income restrictions that are on it? So as is, as restricted. And that's the value we went for. This appraiser had a different view than the one we were here a few years ago. I hope that future appraisers also take the view that this one
does. I don't know if they're here today, but they're are you comfortable with the appraisal approach?
Yeah, I am. It is as restricted as we need it to be. So,
okay. Because that's been an issue of contention in multiple things that have come before our committee over the years. If you aren't happy, then we're not happy. If you're happy, we're happy.
Yeah. And we've had further discussion on the appraisal requirements, and just outline it clear on the 4% process. So we've tried to mitigate the potential surprises so that the appraiser knows, the borrower knows, and everybody's kind of on the same page.
So you became appraiser for the future.
That's not my goal.
Plus the lender chooses, and it's a bit of a roll of the dice every time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's got to be lender ordered.
Right.
Yeah.
They have no incentive to have an overly optimistic appraisal because they're equity investors, so they want the truth. One would expect.
Yes, yeah.
In their interest.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
How many properties are in Group 5? The buildings?
Oh, I'll say 7 different sites.
Okay. And did I understand, or maybe I misunderstood, that with this sort of expanded access to resources, there are buildings that would previously have received little treatment that are going to get significant treatment now?
No, I'm trying to think. The initial scope was something like $21 million across 350 units. So we were somewhere around 70,000 a unit on average. It's that there are two. The bundle is not. It's not 350 units divided by 7. Sorry, I got to do my math. It's not 50 units apiece. There are some really small properties and there are some really big ones.
That's why you grouped them.
Right. So two of the properties together comprise 2/3 of the units. The lion's share of the dollars that we'll spend with the additional funding, oh, I forgot a key detail, goes to that. It's Tamarack, which is right near New Columbia. It's a 120-unit family property. I mentioned the vinyl siding and the painting and the windows. What I forgot to add was we're also adding a community building so we can do more with resident services at that site. Because
basically, you can work further down your triage list.
Yes. So everything was on track to be sustainable for 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's just that if the private sector is willing to provide more funding, there's a lot you'd love to get ahead of.
Sure.
So that's the philosophy.
So what is it per unit? What is the new per unit? Because I'm trying to set that up. I'm not sure we kind of have that number. Because it's kind of hard to compare apples and oranges if it's mostly going to one.
So we are now at 93,000 a unit. I'll round up to 94.
Turn the pages enough to find that number.
No, no. It's, you know what? I don't think we provide it on a per unit basis. There is, let's see. There's this page.
That reads horizontally.
That reads horizontally.
That one, which is a comparison of.
There you go, Ben. Take it away.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yes, and most that's what it's mostly is. I'm curious about the comparison page. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the comparison page.
That's a nice touch, by the way.
How's that?
The original request to the current request.
Oh, good.
It's showing the line item deltas.
It's worth spending a couple minutes. My name is Ben Loftus. I'm the development finance manager for Home Forward. There's essentially two columns, and the for sources and uses are listed in the way that we break down the costs for the committee. And if you focus on the uses, you can see the third line down is construction or rehab. We were at $20.4 million when we were here in April. Where we stand right now is just north of $32.7 million. The difference between April and now in terms of construction, some of that is our estimates back then and our scope. Have gotten bid pricing, and so where we had our own internal estimates, that we now have subcontractor bids and have are going to our board in 2 weeks mm-hmm. to authorize a GMP. So at this point, we have real numbers from the general contractor, while able to hit the scope, the original scope that was presented, as part of our original ask in April.
So the building is acquired. That's jumped up $20 million.
Right.
So is that the community building?
That's the difference in the appraisal. So we had an estimate of just over $28.1 million in value of the seven properties, and the appraisal came back at $48.45 million.
I see. But it, in terms of trying to think about what the extra $20 million in TAB is used for, it's hard for me
to see exactly where it's going.
What you're, I can say. You're doing $12 million in construction. I can see there's some additional capitalized interest, and I can see you're doing more relocation. That gets me close to the number, but it doesn't quite explain the difference in terms of what you're doing.
It's always hard to know exactly when there's different snapshots at different times. So the difference in construction is attributable in part to the appraisal that came in more favorably and the more favorable tax credit pricing we got between April and now as well. I'm trying to think, there's this sheet because in the conversations with the Oregon Housing and Community Services, they've seen a more updated budget than April.
Right.
And so there's been discussion about exactly, it's more focused on where is the equity going. You can in some ways reverse engineer back up to the TAB ask from the amount of additional costs because of the 50% test.
So in a way, you're getting more tax credits and you're actually deploying more of those, like the bond part's kind of doing what it was doing?
The bond part is part of the technicalities of the tax credit program. Our perm debt is staying where it was because that was always sized based on the net operating income of the properties, not what they might sell for out in the market. We were always constrained by just the revenues and not by a loan to value. And what the bonds are really the mechanism by which we can get the additional tax credit financing.
What is your pro forma tax credit pricing at this point?
It's at $1.05.
Okay.
We had assumed $95. I'm remembering initially. Yep.
Yeah, it's a little hard to. I don't think we have something that I can definitively point to. I'm not sure that I care, but I will say just for the public record that Oregon Housing has increasing
right.
their multifamily, and we are going to have less carry forward in January than we've had since I've worked here, and so the specifics as to how PAB gets allocated, we're probably going to have to drill down more just so we understand it better.
Yeah.
I don't see a problem with this, but I think when you bring in group 6, 7, and 8, the level of scrutiny that you might get relative to previous, because depending on how much the governor allocates to Oregon housing in the next bond bill, the committee may have a lot less resource allocated to it. And if that's the case, then every single project, we're just going to have to drill down more than we have before to understand if everyone's optimizing their PAB.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you can't get the tax credits without it. But
right.
It would be nice to know specifically the details, which is why I asked in the first place, what did we think we were buying before?
Right.
What are we buying now? At a level of specificity that maybe we haven't necessarily asked.
Sure. Yeah, nobody, of course. If this proposition by Metro on the ballot is approved tomorrow, that's another claimant on a fixed-size pie.
And,
understood.
And you'll all be playing jump ball against each other.
That hasn't been the case for a decade.
Right.
Or.
Understood.
Right. So that's just in future iteration stands as for, like, detail, but we may want you to more tightly show us.
Mm-hmm.
Your budget, so that it's a little easier for us to, because it's hard for me to figure out exactly what the price per unit is, and that might be one of our criteria.
Okay.
Who knows, right?
Yeah.
So there's some of that on the previous page, which there's two previous pages to what we were just looking at. One is what the sources and uses during construction and permanent looked like in April.
The summary side, and then
I think the one up at the top dated April 19th is what
the first page after.
Okay.
The app.
And that looks like it was $200,000 a unit when you said 90.
Well, that it was $200,000 a unit in April. It's I'm reading there. It's 306.5.
Right. So the April 19th, the per unit bottom line is just over $200,000. The next page is the.
But you're buying a community center now, so it's kind of a, like, in a way, it's not the unit cost. You're doing something outside of the unit. That's for the project.
I agree.
I'm just trying to compare more.
I think one of the things about the tax credit program is that it generates in these acquisition projects where there's a sale between related parties, it's generating tax credit equity off of the value, less so than off of cash that's actually changing hands. And so when you look at that 306,532, and that's a big jump, and so much of the jump is the building, if required, per unit goes from 80 to 138,000 a unit.
Yeah. Okay. Keep talking.
Yeah. That I mean, in a way, you have to look past that because that is not in a way. You have to look past that because that is really it's all reflected on paper. It's all consistent with the tax accounting and the bonds of the tax attorneys who look at this. But the real thing to focus on, where the dollars are going,
and that's what I'm struggling
with, is the construction or rehabilitation,
right?
And that is the 58,000 jumping up to 94, and the private activity bonds are being used primarily as a construction loan and perm loan. During the construction phase, we have this 50% test that we need to get to. The 50% test is based; it brings back in the value of the properties, even though that's a non-cash transaction.
One of the things that's confusing about this, and at some level, hey, this is our form, is confusing because we set it up that way.
Yeah.
Is that there are both cash and non-cash items that are reflected here.
Yep.
And this is, you know, the way tax accountants look at this. This is, you know, by the book as those things go. But if you think about this as cash money moves versus things that are evidenced by notes and other non-cash things, it would be a different schedule.
I don't know exactly how to put that, but since you helped us do the first one, I might be able to help.
We may rework this yet again.
You know, I think, for group 6, 7, 8, I mean, I think that makes sense because it'll give you a truer picture of what's actually happening.
That's what I feel like is missing. And as I said, we asked for this in the first place. We wanted to understand the difference between construction and permanent, but I can't look at your project and figure out exactly what the extra $20.2 million is getting, because I'm trying to look to what it was before,
sure.
and I'm just not able to make that.
And it's not $22.million, to be completely candid, it's not $22.million of permanent financing.
It's 12, right?
The amount of permanent financing has remained effectively the same.
Well,
it's gone up somewhat.
From April, yeah.
From April?
That's what I was curious. What is that? Ember,
when we developed this was for new construction 4% tax credit situations where you don't get this related party asset transfer at the beginning of the process issue that presents itself on every one of these preservation projects. And it may be that we need different versions of this for preservation and non-preservation projects. I mean,
we'd be happy to help. I mean, we have to do this for our own benefit, too,
right.
Track the cost and
for Metro, too. They may be coming if they get their bond issue passed for preservation. And
sure.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're going to, it's just going to force us to kind of come up with, if you do it, that'll be great, and then we'll make everybody else do it, too. That will be helpful.
We plan to come back before the committee in January for Group 6 because that's on track to close
mm-hmm.
and start its rehabilitation at the end of next March. So what we'll do is we'll take a shot at...
Represent this.
Keep this.
An alter one.
A supplementary or an auxiliary schedule that breaks out cash and non-cash.
Right. We may hammer on the format a little bit, but I think that would be helpful.
I think that would be helpful.
I'm happy to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Gladly.
Dean, do you have any questions?
I do not.
I have one more. I noticed that the resolution we was in the packet in our book here. Of course, it's the resolution from last March, which contemplates a different bond financing amount. Did the Board of Commissioners adopt a supplemental resolution?
This coming board meeting, they will. There'll be a revised number.
Will you send that to us for our records?
Yes, absolutely.
This is a nice resolution. It doesn't support your current plan of financing.
The draft resolution went out to select committee. Just last week, we will send you. You don't want the draft; you just want the final.
We want the final.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. That seems like a reasonable request.
And I've
amended and restated.
On November 20th.
November 20th.
Amended and restated.
When will you have that?
The board meeting is November 20th, so we'd have signatures the next day that we can distribute.
And when do you plan to close?
November 28th. If I can, since we're talking about the resolution. So you're right, the first inducement resolution declares our intent to issue bonds. That amount is outdated now, but the intent is still the same, and our board is aware of that intent relative to this Group 5. The second resolution that I included is the board's authorization for us to submit the 4% application, which would be worth less if not for an allocation of bond cap that would allow us to pass the 50% test. So I included the second resolution to show that our board supports movement within bond inducement numbers because the 4% tax credit program couldn't get to a close unless we had an allocation of bond cap that supported the entire deal. So we did go to them before this meeting and
say we did a compliance letter, assuming we agree to the additional allocation. Could we make a contingent upon receiving a resolution?
Sure.
Of the higher amount?
Yep.
So that we're sort of dotting our I's, crossing our T's properly?
That, absolutely. That sounds completely doable and reasonable.
Sure.
Okay.
Fine. Okay. Oh, you mean you send me this stuff to read? Actually,
I count on you to be our lawyer.
No. practicing law without a license is not a good idea.
Yeah.
How about to be just very careful about press? I'll look at that. If there's no other questions, any other comments before we seek a motion to approve?
Yeah.
Any other things from Oregon Housing about the projects?
They meet our guidelines and show they're financially feasible for the next 30 years, the restricted period, and we support the request.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Let me take a stab at that. I move that we approve $20.2 million of 2018 carry forward.
No, regular.
Regular amount for 2018. For Home Forward's 85 Stories Group 5 project, contingent on receiving a copy of the supplemental resolution to be adopted by the Home Forward Board on the 21st of November.
I second it. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Congratulations. We look forward to getting your resolution. We'll draft the letter now, but, you know, we'll send it to you with that contingency.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then I guess we'll do some kind of, you send us a copy of the resolution. Monica can say, acknowledged in your monitoring.
Great.
Yeah, if that works.
It will.
Can I also take the opportunity to point out we've got the existing $36 million in bond cap that is set to expire on December 14th, and while we are on schedule to close on time, which is November 28th, part of the request for the additional 20.2 is to bring both allocations to expire by the end of the calendar year.
Well, I'm not going to grant that because there's a reason in our OAR that we do that, which is that Martha needs to gather together the numbers for the carry forward. If you get to December 13th, I can decide to give you an extension, but I'd rather not give your lawyers and everybody the flexibility to go further, only because Martha has to gather all the stuff together for everybody.
We appreciate the motivation to stay on schedule.
And the reality is, who's really going to do anything between Christmas and New Year's anyway? So I could kind of see going 1 week, but I can't see going 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you concur?
Makes sense. Yeah.
So we can choose as a group. Let's see, I'm looking at the calendar. Because you see, Martha is going to have to scramble like a crazy one in the last week before we mail.
Yes.
If the board would like, I could grant them to the 21st. We could grant them to the 21st, but not the 28th.
You know, there's 3 weeks of fudge between your program close date and the 14th. It's a standard that's uniformly applied to all other applicants.
I'd like to leave it to the 14th with the right, if I have to make an executive decision, to give you an extra week.
That works.
When you're desperate.
We have not to be desperate, but you know, it's happened before.
There was a lot of stuff, the flurry of activity towards the end of the year. The reason that I know that there's, I can't even tell how many multifamily deals, Oregon housing plans close between now and the end of the year. So Martha's going to have her hands full with that.
Our annual survey deadline is the 15th.
Right.
But if everything closes after that, then you have all these revisions coming in, and we work at, you know.
Okay.
Understood.
But you can start getting your carry forward requests ready if you need, if you really are going to blow past the end of the year.
I don't think we're going to blow that far. It's up to HUD. I mean,
but if you are, and just the point is, just, you know, we did move the meeting back a week because I realized that we had tried to do an early meeting of next year, but because of all the flurry of activity with Oregon Housing that we'll be in the middle of with them with all of the different years of carry forward, because we have several years of that, and other agencies, we've moved the meeting back to the 16th, but we're mailing the board pack, or 15th, I think Martha picked. No, the 16th, that's where you picked, right? We're mailing on the 9th, so Martha, remind them when they have to do their 2019 new money or carry forward request. Is that the...
Well, the email already went out on that.
Yeah. When do people have to submit that to you, though? They have to submit...
No sooner than 30 days prior to the scheduled meeting.
So...
And
okay.
No less than 2 weeks prior.
So I just wanted you to be aware that if you're going to come in for group six, if you're ready to go in January, those deadlines are passing. Otherwise, we will have, and that's the last thing in our agenda, is to take a look at the quarterly meeting schedule, which I believe Martha has sent around.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if it's on the agenda page.
I know we've kind of reviewed that informally by email.
Backside.
So on the backside of our cover agenda page, Martha's laid out for us the dates.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have, you know, periodically have non-regular scheduled events, so it's not like that we couldn't.
we're thinking that we can get regularly scheduled. Yeah, we're not counting on that.
So if you are ready for group six, I guess my point is that we're going to be in about a month. I don't know if you've begun the process of Oregon Housing for group six.
That is well underway.
Okay, that's good to know.
Our financing RFP is almost done. I don't know that we're going to
Have you done your appraisal so you know
what that's
you know your tax credit number?
We're not going to have that back by the 2nd because that's when we would need, if it's not no more than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it may not be
that you're quite ready to submit for Group 6 unless you just choose a very conservative number.
Well, I think there's, so in terms of staying on track with the closing in March and your regular schedule, we should and will submit something. I think there is a question about we will make our best educated guess on based on this data that we have. We always aim to be conservative. That's our way of doing things historically and then coming back. I know there's going to be a lot of requests, but maybe there's a discussion to have about what is the best way in terms of your workflow. If we take the exact same appraised values and it turns out they come in lower, we could turn the bond cap back.
Yes, you could.
So maybe that's...
Well, in 19, the PAB committee will still have quite a fair amount of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 20 and 21 cycle that might have a lot less.
Right.
So we'll be in a good position. But I do know of at least one request for an economic development project that is enormous, that could suck down quite a lot of our PAB if we authorize it. So I want you to be realistic because you may not be coming back if we authorize funding for this economic development.
Right. Okay.
But I don't want you to be too aggressive either. So I can't know the right number for you all, but you're just going to have to team up with Oregon Housing and put in what you think is realistic.
We've given it some early thought. There are something similar between groups 5 and group 6 in terms of the types of building and where they're located. There are some differences, and so we'll do our best to take that into account.
Okay. That's all you can do?
Right.
Okay, if there's anything else for the good of the order, then I think we're adjourned. Thank you very much, Martha, again, and Christine, for getting us this room. I like this room. This is a better sized room to have a conversation.
And you're going to give us that
thanks, David.
Pro forma restatement of cash versus non-cash items and the sources.
Thank you.
Do you want it for this group?
No, for the next one.
Or would you mind starting with the next one?
Start with the next one.
If we see in advance, we might have some thoughts about further ways to improve the presentation, too. I mean, obviously, you've got your allocation. It doesn't affect this transaction.
Sure, but we care about
it. But as a starting point...
But if you could use this one right now, because you know the numbers, to kind of just flush out what you heard me trying to get at. What is really... What's going on with construction versus what... You know, you're going to be putting to reserve. It's just some bit hard for me to see how the money, because it's not sources and uses like typical bond finance, truthfully.
My thought is it would be better if you see a revised draft of this now rather than the first time you see an attempt at a cash, non-cash, what are the bonds really paying for in January.
Yeah,
it's in the context of an application, and you're trying to work through the application in the context of other things you're seeing, and it doesn't work for you.
You could spend a few minutes just trying to organize these numbers that we've seen today in something that supposed to what you heard me trying to find an answer to.
Yes, I don't know that it'll be this week, but
it's all right.
It'll certainly be in advance of the application for the January meeting.
And just out of curiosity. If Metro's bonds are approved, do they have a whole pile of projects ready to go, or are they? And as Multnomah County's housing officers, will you be doing some of those? Will those be? And they'll be coming more with Clackamas and or do we know? We don't know.
How much time do you have?
A new complicated wrinkle that we haven't quite seen how this is going to end.
So if the bond passes, but the constitutional amendment does not, there really isn't a tax credit, meaningful low-income housing tax credit future for projects that are bond funded, like the City of Portland bonds are right now. I'm oversimplifying a little bit.
It'll be one-to-one financing.
Right. It'll be, which is not ideal. If the bond and the amendment both pass, then yes, there's you guys can speak to this far better than I can, but there's always a lot of projects in the Portland metro region that that are getting onto that conveyor belt towards starting. You know, they may be going after 9%, they may be going after lift funds, but, you know, there are projects out there that are probably
You're Multnomah County.
Right.
And you're one-third of that bond issue. So theoretically, $150 million out of $450 should be for projects in your scope of responsibility. Or is that too hard to know yet? Like, will they be doing it? Will you be doing it?
Metro will not be doing it. I can keep going.
Does that make sense with my question?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to understand who the players are going
to
be.
So to who the players are, if the amendment does not, bond yes, amendment no, the housing authorities, Metro turns the dollars over to the housing authorities with this guideline for the public policy goals it's trying to achieve in terms of number of units and in terms of affordability levels and in terms of unit mix, bedroom size. If both the bond and the amendment pass, then Metro will work through the participating jurisdictions in the region, which are units of local government large enough to receive federal allocations of block grant money targeted for affordable housing. So those participating jurisdictions are each of the three counties, and then the cities of Portland, Beaverton, Hillsborough, and Gresham.
But not their housing authorities.
So I can blather all day about it. So in the other two, so in Washington and Clackamas County, the housing authorities are units of county government. By dint of providing dollars to the counties, there are dollars that go directly to the housing authorities. I'm oversimplifying.
Both come to our committee before.
Okay.
Once in a great while.
They would be coming more, I think, whether they decide to staff up with their own development capacity or work through, say, turnkey developers or in partnership.
Sure.
In Multnomah County, we're different in that we have our own separate board of commissioners who are appointed by the City of Gresham, Multnomah County, and the City of Portland. So it's the way in which we would get any allocation of dollars would be a little bit more roundabout. We have a project in mind. It's DECOM. It's the last one. It's the 40 units on 5 acres. If you've seen a Hope 6 project, you have. It's akin to what we've done with our smaller Hope 6s in terms of the scale of the site, but it doesn't have any HUD Hope 6 grant dollars available to it. So we are actively proposing to the city, because it's in the City of Portland limits, the City of Portland and to Metro, that this would be a project that they would fund. We're not unique in that. Metro has asked all of the housing authorities and participating jurisdictions, or the things through different game plans, to be working on an early, what they're calling a phase one project, a project that they would immediately take bond dollars and start working towards making a reality.
Which is exciting and great, but it's at a time when suddenly we have more.
No, there's 160
more
million
people calling on
TAB
for everything under the sun. The committee just needs to be aware of the context. Everything starts coming at us.
Yeah. When you were kind of kicking off the list of participating jurisdictions, I certainly heard you mention all three of the counties.
Correct.
I don't think I heard you mention any city within Clackamas County.
You're spot on. Clackamas is the least complicated political environment.
No one ever said that before.
but it's true. I mean, the other two counties.
Like Oswego, Wilsonville, and Oregon City, and I'm sort of thinking, tier any of those over the population threshold? I don't know.
They're not. And so they would be at the table.
Yeah.
And they would be at the table in interesting conversations, which go something like, here's a bunch of money that you would be entitled to based on a Metro's formula allocation, which is based on assessed value. But if you take it, you've got to provide housing where, you know, a certain number of units, and of the units you provide, 40% of them have to be affordable to households at very, very low income.
And like a single says nothing.
And like a figure might say, no thanks, or there are other...
Sure.
Even with the parties that are at the table, there are different versions of that sounds great, or we're not sure if we want to do that.
Yeah, okay.
And we just have the balance of funds go back to the jurisdictions that would want to do it.
And I guess to chime in on what you said earlier, I mean, the kind of the phase one projects, since folks just kind of anecdotal conversations is folks who are thinking about LIFT 1.0 or 3.0 are starting to kind of wait and see, okay, well, this could be a this could potentially be a Metro Bond 1.0 versus a LIFT 1.0. Or
well,
LIFT 3.
Well, people are really smart going, I can get some state LIFT money, I can get some Metro money, I can get some tax credits, and I can do some bonds.
There are
a few people I've talked to who already think about that.
Yeah, no,
that's...
Everybody gets the same thing. They're leveraged.
But there's a really limited amount of PAB, and so folks are going to find that those GO dollars aren't going to go as far as they think they are. Or they're going to have to sell taxable bonds with the GOs, and they're not going to be able to... To really get PAB, which is okay, but they're not going to be able to. There's going to be a practical limit on how much you can use mortgage revenue bonds for, because there's just a finite amount. So unless we get the cap rates on PABs for housing, we're going to have a lot of people chasing very more limited dollars, right?
Understood.
Which is why understanding more of the guts of what you do might become, on a practical basis, really important.
Yeah. Well, whatever we can do to help that.
Well, we'll wait and see what Ben and you concoct next week.
And that'll be hopefully a good start.
Okay.
And we do
again.
Appreciate the ongoing tutorial from all of you.
Exactly.
That's why I have the arcane things I know.
Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Your conference is ending now. As requested by the host, please hang up.